Welcome to the Fearless Future Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine McCourt, transformational life and business coach. Today's guest is one that is unstoppable. Her name is Victoria Pelletier. She's a C-suite executive, a conscientious leader, board director, dynamic speaker, author, and diversity champion. Victoria has spent 20 plus years as a corporate executive and board director, nicknamed the Turnaround Queen by her former colleagues and employees. Victoria inspires and empowers her team and clients to change mindsets and drive growth in business, leadership, and culture. As someone who does not subscribe to the status quo, she is always ready for new challenges, becoming one of the youngest chief operating officers at the age of 24, a president by 35, and a CEO by age 41. Victoria has been recognized as one of the top 2023 Women of Influence by South Florida Business Journal, and in 2022, top 30 most influential business leaders in tech by CIO Look. 2021, top 50 business leader in technology by Insight Magazine, and Mentor of the Year by Women in Communications and Technology in 2020. As a prolific motivational and inspirational speaker, Victoria has delivered keynotes discussing the importance of personal branding and its impact on professional growth. Being an empathetic leader, empowering employees, the power of DEI on corporate cultures, and building a life of resilience. So welcome to the show, Victoria. I'm happy to have you join us today. Your story inspired me. I first saw the book that you are co-author of, which is Unstoppable. So let's start there and dive in and share your story of resilience, drive, and being unstoppable.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
So in life, we all go through some form of evolution, transformation. Some of us, small transformation, others, it can seem quite extensive. And when reading through your story and learning more about you, I kind of envision that your life has really unfolded in these three big transformational chapters. So what is a very traumatic childhood? And then in your 20s, reaching executive level in a well-known tech firm. And then now to a thought leader, you know, sharing your story to shed some light for others, to help them build confidence, resilience, whether that's in life or in business. But I'd love for you to share in your own words really how this all began, or how these three chapters were created for you, or what was the drive behind it. So let's dive in.
Well, thanks, Catherine. I spent a lot of time, mostly over the last decade, sharing as openly as I do around kind of my origin stories, because I recognized I was doing a disservice to those that I would coach and mentor, and people wanted to understand my career trajectory and what launched me here. And although I've never hidden from telling this story, I certainly never would have shared it as openly as I do now on public stages, in a book, et cetera. And so my why, to borrow that from Simon Sinek, is that I was born to a drug-addicted teenage mother who was exceptionally abusive to me. And so I was in and out of the child welfare system. And ultimately, I am one of the fortunate ones, however, who was adopted out of that situation into a loving household with, you know, my parents who were anything but abusive to me, and my mother in particular, the woman who raised me, incredibly supportive in helping me, because I was a very hardened child, fearful of rejection, abuse, all those sorts of things. And it wasn't just sort of that early beginning. It was a multitude of things as well. My parents, albeit loving, lower socioeconomic status, dad was a janitor, my mom was a secretary. Although I had, you know, food insecurity and always were closed, there wasn't money to ever go on vacations. I didn't get to go on my school trips. And so I started working at a very early age. And my mom said to me at some point, I think I was 11 or 12, she's like, Tori, you need to do better than this. But it was, she didn't have to say that, because I think I knew without having the words then, but that I can articulate now, I was determined to be better than biology or circumstance. Mm-hmm. So that is my why. That's what drives me so hard and has created this very resilient individual who now, as you said, tries to help others with that.
So where do you think this started for you, that you started to see things differently for your future? Was it, you know, having that talk with your mother, or was there something in particular where, you know, you were a certain age, something happened and you're like, no, damn it, I'm doing something different?
I
or I'm ready for this even, right?
I think, you know, in my youth, no, I never, ever needed to have that conversation with my mother. But I think I knew at that age that like I wanted more and I wanted different. And so working was a place actually I felt I had a little bit more control, certainly in terms of my performance and my work ethic. And so it started from that. I feel like probably in my early years, it was a little bit more around proving to the rest of the world my value and worth. And some of that just came with like achieving a higher status and making more money and then buying more things. As I matured, a lot of those meant a heck of a lot, you know, less to me. And it was really more around kind of the impact I was having on others. And, you know, I think back also on a couple of things, though, that around my own parent situation. My parents declared bankruptcy. I graduated high school at 16 and was in my first year of university at 17. And I moved out at that time. And it was right around that time they declared bankruptcy. So hearing it at that moment, like I bought my first house at 19. Like I was just like, I'm going to do things very differently than, you know, what I've seen from, you know, my family experience.
Yes. Well, I can tell you right now, a lot of people would love to have that story of I bought my first home at 19, considering the way the world is today. They're, you know, making it really, I think the media is making it more challenging on younger folk, making them feel like they can't afford it. But there's always a way, I believe. Awesome. So, you, at a very young age, you just were saying like you were obviously super motivated to make things happen for yourself, to make things different in your life. What brought you to this career and how long did you stay in the career before you really hit executive level? Like, I imagine you're someone who climbed the ladder very quickly. And on this show, we talk a lot about people who either transformed out of a corporate job into something different or those who climbed the corporate ladder and how they feel about it today. So, what did that look like for you? Because it seems like it was such a short time. You know, in your 20s, you reached that executive level.
Yeah, it was. So as I said, I started working at 11. By 14, I was the assistant manager at the shoe store I worked at. And that was when my like leadership experience began. And then I worked for a bank while I was in university and they promoted me up through the ranks. I had no plans on being kind of the corporate executive. My goal from childhood and in university was to be a lawyer. But it turned out I loved the work that I was doing. I loved being a leader and I was given new challenges. And I continued to challenge myself and learn more and more. So I ended up taking a ton of different courses to end up like having my securities license in my early 20s and running a large operation for a discount brokerage for one of the banks. And it was that I got recruited out of there to go and be the chief operating officer for a large outsourcing organization. And it was a very big stretch role for me at 24, new mother, but they had large banking clients and I'd come from banking and contact center outsourcing at the time was a lot of it was around call center work. And so I had that experience and I also stepped into, you know, like with confidence. And I think that's why I got the role. And then, yes, I've stayed there ever since. So my, you know, I am a B2B professional services executive have been, if you were to look at my LinkedIn profile, some people might go, I don't like see tangentially how these are all connected, but they absolutely are. I mean, it's all about, you know, consult technology operations for other companies. And so there is a linear line, but then as you said, your audience, like it pivots or changes. For me, my view on leadership, my view on what success looked like evolved to being a human-centered leader and creating much better culture environment for people to work in versus this pure view of like performance and financial metrics that businesses look at. And then I started to also sit on board, some of which were not for profits aligned with my background and experience. And I've also always had a side hustle. So I have a very entrepreneurial spirit, even though I work for very large companies. So I built and bought businesses as well.
Wow. That's really amazing. So maybe that brings me to my next question, which is, clearly you are unstoppable, but what does that really mean to you?
Unstoppable is my word. Yes. Well, it's the, you know, I co-authored a book called that, but it's just kind of my philosophy and mantra for in life. And it comes back actually to those early years of being very resilient. And so being unstoppable for me means, first of all, I've never let my circumstance nor any individual tell me how far I was going to go or not to go. I defined how expansive those boundaries were for myself. And that evolved and changed over time for me, but I always defined what that looked like. And then adversity and challenge are always going to come our way. I hope for many of your listeners, it doesn't come with some of the trauma that, you know, I've personally experienced. But even in business, I've been a part of 18 mergers and acquisitions. That's hard work. There's significant yes. amount of change and challenge. And so being unstoppable means that I'm going to face whatever the challenge is head on. I will either fail fast. I haven't always been successful, but I'm going to learn from right. that. Or I'm just going to tackle it and build a plan, focus on and anchor on the goal or objective ahead of me. And like, I always view it like one foot in front of the other, like that's progress. And so that for me is what being unstoppable means.
Beautiful. So in your journey, you know, most people seek out some form of help or they surround themselves around others who are doing things that they aspire to. What was it for you? Did you find professional help? Did you use coaches? Did you use therapy? What helped you in times where you were feeling some adversity and what helped you get to triumph, let's say?
So I've never personally used therapists, but I'm a mm-hmm. huge supporter of it. In fact, when my ex passed away, I immediately had my children in grief counseling and recognized the value that it can give for others. For me, my mother actually was incredible. I hated it as a teenager. She would sit me down for hours talking. And I'm like, Mom, like, I don't need, she's like, Tori, like, we're going to explore. Why are you thinking? Why are you feeling this way? Why are you acting this way? And again, I hated it. Yeah. But that ability to be so incredibly self-reflective and self-aware is a big part of what helped me get to where I am and overcome a lot of things and figure out where I want to go. You know, I think of a couple of years ago, I took a new role and I'm a big believer, don't be running from something, run to something. And although I was unhappy in the company I was at, I thought their culture was quite poor. So I was happy to leave, but I also thought I was running to something. And when I got there, it turned very much not to be the case. Mm-hmm. And I spent a period of time going, okay, the common denominator here between these two companies is me. So what is it in me and what do I need to be better or different in either an organizational culture environment or the role itself? And I attribute my ability to do that actually back to my mom. So, you know, I haven't needed the kind of formalized counseling that I think works for many others, but that's helped me tremendously.
Yeah, I love that point. You know, for myself, I've gone through that emotion, I guess you say, where, you know, things just aren't working out at all. And you kind of have to step back and recalibrate and go, okay, well, what's really not working and why isn't it working? And how can I step forward? And now I coach people on that. And the big thing that came up really early on in my career was being proactive versus reactive. So the moments that you're finding that you're being just reactive to everything is usually because there's something that's not sitting right with you or it's not resonating with you, even though you think, no, God, I love this. Keep going. But are you being reactive or proactive? And it kind of sounds like that's a bit of what you went through too, was like, okay, how am I going to be proactive in this? I'm recognizing and building that self-awareness of, yes. okay, this is not working because of something going on with myself.
That's okay. it.
That's always the hardest thing is to turn that mirror around.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, beautiful. So what is really your driver? Like if someone said, you know, what are your motivators? What keeps you going? Because it sounds like you have a lot of things going on and maybe that's what keeps you going, right? It's just the diversity. I know I'm someone who is, as they call, multi-passionate. I like a variety of things in my life. I don't like just always sitting on one trail and just, you know, hitting that day to day. So what about you? What's your real motivators and drivers that continue to keep you going?
It's funny you said, what did you say? Multi-passionate?
Yes.
I have in my email signature that I'm a multi-potentialite, which is very much that. So I'm not status quo girl, never have been. You know, I'm the type who would want to break things just to fix them and put everything back together again. I seek challenge and through that comes growth for me. So having a multitude of interests is something that keeps me very motivated in moving forward. And at some point when I got very clear around what I want my legacy to be, all the things that I choose to do, those diverse interests align, you know, with a lot of that. And so for me, you know, early in my career, I didn't think, oh, I'm going to be a CEO someday. I knew I wanted to, you know, do more and have more responsibility. And at some point that, you know, that desire came because I wanted the ability to influence much more across, holistically across an organization. But I worked for companies that are, the last many years, publicly traded companies, Accenture, IBM, Aon, American Express. And the measurements, you know, for success for many of these companies who are publicly traded, quarter to quarter results tend to be about sales and profit. Mm-hmm. That is not, I've been very successful, you know, delivering results for businesses, but that is not how I want to be remembered. The legacy right. I want to leave is about being this really great human-centered individual, a leader in business and in community and helping others. Many people aren't going to have the same level of resilience that I have. Not only have it somewhat innately in my DNA, but I also believe it's like a muscle and you learn and get better. And helping people with that, I'm passionate about diversity and inclusion. And again, building great, not just workplaces, but communities. Like those are all things that are important to me. And so therefore, that is an anchor for me always in terms of mindset and what fuels me forward. And does it align with things that bring me joy? Or does it align with the things that, you know, will impact and drive towards the legacy I'd like to leave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And more companies are starting to recognize that. How do we get our people to think differently and think that way? And that's a lot of the work that I do as well, is working with organizations to help them recognize that there is a different way. And it doesn't mean it's going to hinder your profit or profitability. Right. It's just a very different way of approaching business and approaching your teams to get the results that you need.
Yeah.
Okay. Agreed. So you said that you co-authored a book, Unstoppable, which is stories of change makers that dare to make a difference. What can people expect to get out of this book?
So it, although I said I've been sharing my story pretty openly for about 10 years, this was the me formalizing it on paper and sharing it. So I'm super flattered and thankful that the publishers made me the first chapter in the book, opening it, and it's called Courage to Live. And I share a little bit of what I've shared with you and your listeners here today and some of the lessons. I talk about flexing muscles and learning. And so I share some of that, my chapter in that book.
Mm-hmm. What do you think was the driver or what created the shift for you to start telling your story? Because you said early on, when we started talking, is like, it wasn't necessarily something that you would share or lead with. You know, we came from a world, I believe it's generational, which is that you go to work and you be professional and you don't share all your woes and whatever. And now kind of the general census is that, no, let people come and show vulnerability. I mean, don't come and just create a mess at work of emotion, but figure out how to handle it and use it as a tool to show vulnerability as a good leader. What was it that shifted for you to help you be brave, I guess, or have the confidence to say, hey, this is a part of me and part of who I am, and it's important that people hear it?
I think it's probably a couple of parts to me making that shift. The first was, you're right, Catherine, I had this moment where I was like, I have to show up and be all business all the time. And particularly because I was a very young female executive. So I was the youngest in that first role by a couple of decades, and I was the only woman. And so, like, I'll be damned that anyone was going to think that I was soft or overly emotional. Right. Oh, you know, I had this mask and I would show up. And several years later, I learned that my nickname had become the Iron Maiden. And that's in part leading outsourcing organizations. People outsource your mess for less. You have to be very, very diligent at managing performance. And also because I'd already started to do some like acquisitions at that point and managed most of those. Top decisions had to be made, performance needed to be coached and developed, and I didn't show the human side. And so that was like, you know, step number one to go, like, I need to do better and different. Like, if that's the way people see me, like, perception becomes reality, and that's not who I am. And so I had to take some of that mask down and show up and be like my nickname is Turtle. My best friend called me that. Like, I've got a tough exterior. I can shoulder a lot, but like, I'm all soft and mushy inside. And so I had to let some of that out. And, you know, so that was one of the first steps for me in that journey. The second was, as I began to be highlighted more, I do a ton of public speaking and, you know, regularly appear in media. And so that brought a lot of attention to me. And I was asked to do more and more speaking, particularly to women or, you know, different diverse employee groups generally. And I just realized I couldn't tell them, you know, talk about my career path and my drive and what's gotten me there if I didn't actually tell them my story. Mm-hmm. Or even I remember I had a new leader, I'd started a new role. And a few months later, I was going on vacation and I said, don't worry, Mike, like I'm going to be checking my email. And he's like, whoa, no. I'm like, I said, no, you need to understand. It's innately in my DNA, I said, to do that. And so I tell my team, do as I say, not as I do. But I needed for him to understand a little bit of where does that come from? Is he trying to coach me against it? I'm like, no, like here. And so being just that real authentic leader, it again goes back to like the kind of legacy and like how I want to help people. And if that means I share very openly and vulnerably what my experience has been, then I think people will be able to see whatever their own adversity's been, a little bit of likeness, right, and know that they too can be unstoppable or move forward to whatever that journey looks like for them.
Yeah, because I think as humans too, we're so good at making excuses, right? Oh, of course she's here because she has this or because she's like this. But once they know a little deeper, things that you have been through, like you said, that they can relate to or things that resonate with them, then it makes it easier to go, well, actually, yeah, I can, you know, if she did it, then I can too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I certainly can relate to the whole, you know, being in a man's world. When it comes to business, my whole background is sales and business development and in a variety of industries that were certainly male dominant. So I had to carve out my own way. Okay, awesome. So now you mentioned just now that you are asked often to speak in the media and you yourself are a speaker and a thought leader. So is that typically now how you are helping get your message out and share with the world, you know, to be unstoppable? Is it through your speaking or are there other ways that you work with individuals?
So I continue to be a corporate executive. My quote unquote day job is as an executive, but I've negotiated it with the employers that I worked for that I would be able to continue to do this on the side. Now they get to leverage it. So I'll tell you both at my current and former employer, Accenture, and then IBM, they leveraged it pretty heavily. And I said, like, I'll speak at conferences, I'll speak at events, I'll speak to employee resource groups, all these sorts of things. And so we can leverage my experience speaking internally and with our clients. I often run like C-suite roundtables. So that's how my employers leverage it. And then I do it on the side. I don't actually want it to be my full time. It brings me joy. And I think if I was hustling hard to get the next speaking gig all the time, I would not enjoy it in the same way that I do now. But that has created a massive platform for me. I've also, as a result of that, get asked to regularly appear on national radio and television, speaking not just adversity. I speak on diversity, inclusion, and leadership and culture and things that I do for my day job as well. But that's become the platform, as well as now having a large following across the various social media platforms that I have.
Okay. Today, what would you say is something that, you know, sticks with you in terms of someone's feedback or someone's comment or review, any of that that has come back to you from speaking or from the work that you do?
Well, I shouldn't say. I have blowback more around the topics that I speak on by those who have different ideological or political views than me.
Oh.
But not so much about me as a speaker as what I cover. So again, you know, diversity and inclusion, like when Biden overturned the transsexual military piece. I live in the US now and it was on many television and radio stations. And so people who didn't support my support of that certainly came back to me. So I just tend to like block out those and chalk them up to, you know, just very different, as I said, ideological or like political opinion.
Yes. If you could go back to maybe when you were preteen, what you are today, what would you share with yourself back then in terms of life advice?
I would have told my teenage and even 20-something-year-old self that it was okay to bring the walls down. So although I'm very, very resilient, I wouldn't say, Catherine, I always had a very healthy way of being resilient. So compartmentalizing things and not always processing the toughest things. And so that would be one. And the other is just around, you know, being my authentic self. sharing my lived experience with others, like it actually is so much more rewarding and fulfilling. And everything I thought I was afraid of in doing it was false.
What would you say is your most favorite topic that you see that you are just on fire when you speak about it?
Leadership and culture, and as an extension of that, diversity and inclusion. And the reason why it lights me on fire is organizations talk about culture and they build an employee value proposition, yet they aren't prepared to change some of the things internally. Culture is the outcome of, yes, a vision statement. You might put it up on the wall for everyone to be clear that that's the target, but you know who they have in leadership, the policies, the procedures, the language, the actions, the behavior, the incentive models, all those things that are contribute to creating this great place to work in, and the culture we strive towards being the outcome of all of those things. And so I am very comfortable being a bit of a S disturber, in challenging those things and challenging the leaders to do different, to take like demonstrable action towards striving towards that kind of outcome they talk about.
There's a lot of businesses out there that are truly uncomfortable still. And there's a lot of work to be done. So I commend you on that, on doing that work for sure. What advice do you have for other women who aspire to achieve at least some of the milestones that you've achieved? So as I said, like I kind of looked at your story and went, wow, okay, so she's someone who went through adversity to triumph and someone who built a career and became an executive / board director, now a thought leader and speaker. What advice would you give to other women who at least just want to tackle one of those milestones?
Well, I kind of categorize my success into four buckets. So yes, resilience is one. The next is around my performance and focus on improving my own skills. And so I would tell the women listening, like, you are the CEO of you, and don't put that in the hands of your employer or your leader. You own your personal development. Yes, you get support from your organization, your leader, but don't wait for it to happen. Go out actively and get it. And then the other is around boundaries. And that means two things for me. That's like setting my goals as wide, that aperture incredibly wide, as far as you want to go. So no, you don't have to achieve some of the same level of success. Your audience is going to define what that means for them. And so set that goal. Don't let anyone define it for you. And then in getting there, particularly with the demands that women tend to bear more than their male counterparts, the ability to say no, delegate, and outsource. The notion of having it all, you can, not all at the same time. It doesn't come without compromise. It doesn't come out with, should you choose to be partnered, having a partner that supports you equally in all of the duties, but also getting really good at saying no. And then the last thing is actually around personal brand and how important your personal brand and by extension your network becomes in achieving whatever that goal is for yourself as well.
So awesome. Well, is there anything that we didn't talk about today, Victoria, that you think would be really helpful? I mean, this podcast is about transformation, business, and wellness. And I myself coach from a place of three pillars: clarity, purpose, and wellness, I think have to exist in life and in business to be a success. Is there anything else that you came on here hoping to share that maybe we didn't touch base on?
No, what I'll leave your listeners with is one of my favorite quotes by George Adair, which is, everything you've ever wanted lives on the other side of fear. And I just think that the transformation and the growth won't come if we don't challenge ourselves, lean into the things that make us really uncomfortable, and be comfortable with failing fast. And so not fearing whether the no or the rejection on something. I think great things can happen if we lean into the things that make us nervous or scared.
Beautiful. Yeah, the quicker we fail, the quicker we'll get to success, or at least some clarity. So thank you so much, Victoria, for being part of the show. I really was inspired by your story, and I encourage everyone to go get your book, Unstoppable. And where can people connect with you?
I have a personal website, which is victoria-peltier.com. And so most of the content that I write is written there. The book is there. And if they prefer to connect out with me on different social media platforms, they can get the links from there as well.
Okay. Well, Victoria, I wish you all the best in your journey. And thank you so much for being such a great guest.
Thanks, Catherine.
Fearless Future podcast is made possible by platforms such as Buzzsprout and Riverside FM. If you're interested in starting your own podcast, Buzzsprout is a great place to start to host, promote, and begin tracking your podcast. They have a 360-degree service and a ton of videos to help you get set up, choose the right equipment, and how to monetize your podcast. Their customer service is the quickest and most reliable to keep you growing and never stall your creative output. It's a super easy platform to use and connect your podcast to all major platforms for listeners to find you. So ready to launch your podcast? Go ahead and use the Buzzsprout link that I put in the show notes and receive a $20 Amazon gift card after your second paid invoice. Riverside FM is my studio platform that allows me to schedule and invite guests into a professional and interactive studio. You can have one or multiple guests, and it records separate tracks for ease in editing and creating clips. It's an intuitive platform that makes your videos look great and improves any sound quality, including sound effects. Follow the links in the show notes to review if these platforms can work for you. Want a secret for editing? Check out the Descript link that I put in the show notes. This is the easiest platform I've ever used to edit podcasts or any type of audio or video. So yes, you can upload video. You can get the transcript. And all you have to do is edit the transcript and you're done. Super easy. Check it out. All the best on your journey and have a fantastic week.